In the golden age of Greek mythology, there was a kingdom nestled beneath the watchful gaze of the Olympian gods, a kingdom ruled by a man whose name would reverberate through the annals of time. Tantalus, born the son of the mighty Zeus, embarked on a life journey that would leave an indelible mark on the world, and his tale would give rise to the very word tantalize in the English language. Tantalus's origins were as divine as they come. He was the fruit of a union between Zeus, the ruler of the heavens, and Pluto, a nymph graced by the presence of Mount Sipolis. The nymph's beauty was said to rival that of the most enchanting goddesses, and her connection to the divine realm was a testament to the profound nature of her offspring's destiny. From the moment of his birth, Tantalus was marked by divine favor. Zeus, the ever-watchful father, saw potential in his son that transcended mortal boundaries. In recognition of this potential, Zeus bestowed upon Tantalus a realm to rule, a majestic domain nestled within the awe-inspiring embrace of Mount Sipolis. The kingdom of Sipolis, draped in natural beauty and blessed with abundant resources, was a testament to the divine lineage of its ruler. From the snow-capped peaks of the mountain to the lush valleys below, it was a land touched by the hand of the gods, a realm worthy of a favored son. Tantalus's life would take a momentous turn when he decided to take a queen, but his choice was no ordinary one. In an act that further intertwined his fate with the divine, Tantalus wed Dione, a woman whose lineage traced back to the formidable Titan Atlas. Dione's presence in the royal court was not just a marriage of mortal convenience, it was a union that brought celestial bloodlines into the heart of Tantalus's kingdom. From the union of Tantalus and Dione blossomed a trio of offspring, each destined to leave an indelible mark on the tapestry of Greek mythology. Their names would echo through the ages: Niobe, Pelops, and Broteas. Little did they know that their lives would soon become entangled in the capricious and often cruel nature of the gods. Niobe, a daughter whose beauty rivaled that of the goddesses themselves, would become renowned not only for her loveliness, but also for her tragic pride. Pelops, the son who would ultimately ascend to his father's throne, bore the weight of destiny upon his young shoulders. And Broteas, the lesser-known brother, held a fate marked by the fiery wrath of a vengeful goddess. Tantalus, as a favored son of Zeus, often found himself in the esteemed company of the gods. His presence graced the banquets of Olympus, where divine ambrosia and nectar flowed freely, and celestial conversations filled the air. Tantalus failed to recognize the magnitude of his fortune. It was here that his first missteps took root. Tantalus, intoxicated by his proximity to the divine, succumbed to the allure of mortal curiosity. He would clandestinely return to the mortal world, whispering tales of the divine conversations held at the celestial feasts. Secrets and gossip flowed from his lips like the wine that flowed at those mythical gatherings, casting shadows of mistrust among the gods. But it was not mere gossip that tainted Tantalus's reputation. His audacious desire for immortality led him down a treacherous path. He sought to pilfer the ambrosia and nectar of the gods, substances believed to grant immortality, in a reckless attempt to elevate himself to their divine ranks. Tantalus's misdeeds extended beyond theft and betrayal. He stood accused of stealing a golden dog, a masterwork crafted by Hephaestus, the divine blacksmith. The heavens themselves watched as the favored son of Zeus sank deeper into the abyss of transgression. Yet it was Tantalus's most heinous act that would cast an enduring shadow over his name. In a twisted bid for amusement or power, the king extended an invitation to the very gods who had favored him, a banquet hosted within his own kingdom. This fateful gathering would etch his name into the annals of infamy. For reasons known only to him, Tantalus chose to play a dark trick on the gods that night, a trick that would stain the pages of mythology with the blackest of deeds. In a horrifying twist of fate, he committed an act that would forever haunt the Olympians. He murdered his own son, Pelops, in cold blood. But Tantalus's depravity did not stop there. The lifeless body of his son was dismembered, its flesh sliced and cooked to macabre perfection, and then offered as a grotesque feast to the unsuspecting deities. Most of the gods in attendance quickly discerned the true nature of the banquet, their divine instincts alert to the unholy act unfolding before them. However, in a cruel twist of fate, Demeter, the goddess of agriculture and fertility, was momentarily distracted by the absence of her beloved daughter Persephone. The young goddess had been abducted by Hades and taken to the depths of the underworld, leaving Demeter consumed by grief and worry. In her vulnerability, Demeter took a bite of the horrific meal. Zeus, the ruler of the gods, recoiled in anger at the audacious betrayal of trust. He summoned the Moirai, the Fates, to rectify the heinous feast, a feast that defied the very order of the cosmos. The Moirai, in their solemn duty, embarked on a miraculous act. They recooked the meal in a mystical cauldron, reconstructing the dismembered body of Pelops with divine precision. Yet, as they toiled to undo the nightmarish banquet, a chilling discovery emerged. The shoulder of Pelops remained incomplete, for Demeter had unwittingly consumed a portion of it. To amend this grievous imperfection, Demeter enlisted the skills of Hephaestus, the god of blacksmiths and craftsmanship. With the lustrous medium of ivory, Hephaestus sculpted a replacement shoulder for Pelops, forever marking the prince's body as a testament to the horrors of that night. The gods, their divine senses keen and their patience worn thin, did not hesitate to deliver judgment. Tantalus was forcibly removed from his throne, his rule over Sipylus abruptly terminated. In his stead, Pelops, the resurrected son, ascended to claim his father's seat. But Zeus, the arbiter of justice, was not content with mere mortal punishments. He had a more profound sentence in mind, one that would etch the name of Tantalus into the darkest corners of the Greek underworld. Tartarus, the pit of eternal torment. Tantalus's crimes of infanticide and cannibalism were among the most heinous imaginable in the eyes of the ancient Greeks. Thus it was fitting that his punishment be nothing less than eternal and agonizing. The curse of Tantalus unfolded in the nightmarish depths of Tartarus, a place where the boundaries between life and death blurred into a perpetual abyss. It was a punishment witnessed by none other than the cunning and resourceful hero Odysseus during his harrowing descent into the realm of Hades. Tantalus, once a king among men, now stood as a wretched soul in the forsaken heart of the underworld. His fate, a ceaseless torment, bore a cruel symmetry to his earthly crimes. For all eternity, he found himself trapped in a tableau of tantalizing torment, a tableau that would become a cautionary tale for mortals and gods alike. In the center of his cursed existence, Tantalus stood submerged in a lake, its waters as crystal clear as the purest of springs. It appeared as a resplendent oasis, shimmering under the pale, otherworldly light of the underworld. But this was a mirage, a tantalizing illusion that concealed the true nature of his suffering. Tantalus's thirst, a thirst that no mortal could ever comprehend, gnawed at his parched throat like fire. The waters around him beckoned with a siren's call, promising relief from his insatiable need. Yet, as he reached down to cup the cool liquid in his trembling hands, the surface of the lake receded, taunting him with its elusive retreat. The very act of drinking was forever denied to him, a cruel mockery of his eternal thirst. Above him, tormentingly close yet forever beyond reach, stretched an orchard of trees. These trees bore fruits of unparalleled sweetness and succulence, each one a tantalizing masterpiece of nature's bounty. The vibrant colors and mouth-watering aroma of the fruits teased his senses, their allure an unrelenting assault on his starved senses. Driven by hunger, Tantalus would extend his trembling arms towards the fruits, fingertips straining to pluck even a single morsel from the branches. And as he did, a sinister wind, as if conjured by the malevolence of the gods, would sweep through the orchard. The branches would sway and the fruits would dance just out of his grasp, a dance of eternal frustration. Every attempt to sate his hunger was met with the bitter taste of disappointment. But it was not only thirst and hunger that haunted Tantalus in this nightmarish realm. Above him, suspended like a relentless guillotine, balanced a colossal stone, poised to descend upon him at any moment. Its presence, an ever-present menace, weighed heavily on his already tortured soul. The fear of that stone falling and crushing him was a torment of its own, a perpetual source of dread. In this tableau of anguish, Tantalus was trapped between the insatiable desires of thirst and hunger, the unending fear of impending doom, and the tantalizing but eternally elusive promise of relief. His punishment was a reflection of the depths of his hubris, a torment designed to mirror the depravity of his actions in life. The curse of Tantalus did not confine itself to the fallen king alone. It would seep into the very roots of his family tree, entangling his descendants in a web of tragedy and retribution. The House of Tantalus, once bathed in divine favor, would become synonymous with doom and suffering. The punishment meted out on the children of Tantalus served as a testament to the relentless pursuit of justice by the gods, a pursuit that spanned generations and transcended mortal and divine realms alike. Proteus, Tantalus's own son, would burst into flames as a consequence of slighting the goddess Athena, an act of arrogance that proved fatal, consuming him in divine wrath. Niobe, Tantalus's ill-fated daughter, would unleash her own tragedy through reckless pride. She dared to boast that she was a superior mother to the goddess Leto, a brazen challenge that would invoke the wrath of Apollo and Artemis. These divine siblings descended upon Niobe's household, mercilessly slaying her 14 children and turning her into a weeping stone, a monument to her prideful arrogance. Pelops, the surviving son of Tantalus, emerged from the shadows of his father's transgressions to claim the throne of Sipylus. His ascent was marked by treacherous deeds that would deepen the curse that clung to his family like a relentless specter. Pelops was a man driven by ambition, and his quest for power would sow the seeds of tragedy that continued to plague the House of Tantalus. Upon ascending to the throne, Pelops sought to consolidate his power and expand his dominion. His ambitions led him beyond the borders of his own realm, and he embarked on a journey that would forever change the landscape of ancient Greece. It was during this journey that he would commit an act that would cast a long shadow over his lineage. Pelops set his sights on the fertile region known as the Peloponnese, a land that would ultimately bear his name. His arrival in this bountiful territory was not met with open arms, but with the resistance of Eleus, the ruling monarch. Undeterred by the formidable opposition, Pelops pressed forward, determined to claim the Peloponnese as his own. What transpired next would become a testament to the lengths to which Pelops was willing to go in his pursuit of power. He conspired to gain the favor of Eleus's daughter, Hippodamia, as a means to secure his claim to the Peloponnesian throne. However, this plan was riddled with treachery, for it involved the murder of Hippodamia's father and the disposal of an accomplice. Pelops' ambition knew no bounds, and he orchestrated the murder of Eleus with ruthless efficiency. The coup left Hippodamia vulnerable, and she had no choice but to turn to the very man responsible for her father's demise. Pelops seized the opportunity to marry her, solidifying his grip on the Peloponnesian kingdom. Yet, the curse that had plagued the House of Tantalus did not wane with Pelops' newfound power. Instead, it took on a new form, a curse of manipulation, betrayal, and the erosion of trust. The murder of Eleus haunted Pelops, a specter of guilt that lingered in the recesses of his soul. He was not content with a single act of treachery, for he soon turned on his accomplice in the murder, eliminating the only witness to his crime. Pelops was willing to go to any lengths to safeguard his newfound dominion and protect the secrets that bound him to the Peloponnesian throne. The true depths of this curse would be revealed through the tumultuous tale of Pelops' own offspring, Atreus and Thyestes. The brothers, bound by blood and shared ambition, would become entangled in a cycle of treachery and revenge that would come to symbolize the tragic legacy of the House of Tantalus. Atreus and Thyestes, once united as brothers, became locked in a cycle of retribution fueled by jealousy and ambition. Their bitter rivalry would seal the fate of their house and cast a dark shadow over the Peloponnesian throne. The curse, like a relentless storm, continued to surge through the generations. The tale of Atreus and Thyestes would unfold as a harrowing saga of deception and vengeance that would shake the very foundations of the Peloponnesian kingdom. Their actions would echo through the ages, a testament to the enduring power of the curse that had plagued the House of Tantalus since its inception. The curse, unwavering in its pursuit of suffering, would continue its inexorable march through the House of Tantalus. Atreus met his own demise at the hands of his nephew, and the baton of tragedy was passed to two great-grandsons of Tantalus, Agamemnon and Menelaus. Agamemnon, a renowned king and commander of the Greek forces during the Trojan War, would meet a gruesome end at the hands of his own wife, Clytemnestra. Her treacherous act of revenge, fueled by years of betrayal and resentment, would stand as a chilling reminder of the curse's enduring power. But the cycle of vengeance was not yet complete. Orestes, the son of Agamemnon, would emerge as a beacon of hope amidst the darkness of his family's legacy. In a desperate bid to break the cycle of retribution, he turned to Athena, the goddess of wisdom and warfare, for guidance. With Athena's divine counsel, Orestes would stand trial before the Erinyes, the avenging Furies. The fate of his family hung in the balance, the weight of generations of bloodshed and betrayal resting heavily upon his shoulders. In a dramatic and climactic turn of events, Orestes would find a path to redemption, convincing the Erinyes to spare him and end the curse that had plagued his family for so long. It was a moment of catharsis, a glimmer of hope amidst the darkness that had shrouded the house of Tantalus. The curse of Tantalus had finally been broken, but the scars of the past would forever linger in the annals of Greek mythology. The house of Tantalus, once bathed in the favor of the gods, had become a symbol of the consequences of hubris, betrayal, and the relentless pursuit of power. As the mists of time shrouded the tales of ancient Greece, the legend of Tantalus endured as a cautionary tale, a stark reminder that even the mightiest of mortals are not immune to the wrath of the gods. The curse of Tantalus serves as a testament to the enduring power of myth, a story that continues to captivate and haunt the imaginations of those who dare to explore the depths of Greek mythology.